I mean, this is what the Bible says is going to happen, and we can either agree with it or disagree with it, but if we do agree with it in principle, then that means that we have to readjust our lives and begin to build that end-time trust for end-time trials, or we will be sucked in.
Exactly. And at a very time that we're living in where that needs to happen, it seems as if there's such a strong movement in the other direction on the religious standpoint.
Oh, yeah.
And we're talking off the air about the, you know, the World Council of Churches that
yes.
has represented the mainline Protestant denominations now for many years. And the last couple of years, they have held a major meeting in Rome. And there is a coming together now between the major Protestant denominations and Roman Catholicism. And I believe the next step, and it's already happening, is the promotion of interfaithism. So there's this false unity of so-called Christendom taking place. And now that element is prepared to merge together with the other religions as well. And it should not come as a surprise that the current Pope, Benedict, is promoting this agenda just like John Paul II did.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, a little known point of interest here is that the current Pope actually was a mentor to the previous Pope on matters concerning dogma. And that's why there hasn't been a lot of change between the two popes. They're very much similar in their religious outlook. It's just that the previous pope had more charisma and personality. And personally, I believe there are those elements in the hierarchy at the Vatican that would like to see the current pope leave just so they can get somebody younger and more vibrant in there to carry on the agenda. But as far as the agenda is concerned, we're not going to see a big change. It's going to continue to move toward interfaithism, bringing the world's religions together, a strong focus on Jerusalem and internationalizing that city, and bringing the world's religions together there. I believe ultimately...
Well, that's happening as we speak.
It is. And I believe ultimately the goal is to make Jerusalem the religious interfaith capital of the world, and to have either UN troops or international troops of some type, maybe from an empowered European Union, stationed there enforcing Jerusalem as an international city, no longer under the direct control of Israel as a sovereign city.
Well, the Vatican declared its desire and intention to, you could say, almost rule and reign from Jerusalem.
Yes, you know, it's just a matter of time. Things
yeah.
are clearly moving in that direction. And every day you look at the headlines and the point of most friction in the world, it's always the Middle East. You know, between Israel and Syria or Iran and Israel, something's got to give there.
And all of this now is coming to a head. Barack Obama has decreed that there will be peace, and if it has not been accomplished by this fall, that he will impose that peace, and he already has his peace agenda in place. And the so-called quartet of nations, the EU, the UN, Russia, and the U.S. are behind him in accomplishing that. So all of these pieces now are culminating. They're coming to a head, just as you said. And here's a quote from a year ago on the Sunday Times, the London Times. Says historians will look back and say this was no ordinary time, but a defining moment, an unprecedented period of global change, and a time when one chapter ended and another chapter began. The scale and the speed of this global crisis has at times been almost overwhelming. In countries everywhere, people have been feeling powerless and afraid, and now is the time for leaders of every country in the world to work together. There it is. That's the statement. And I have in front of me a Constitution for the Federation of Earth that was put together back in 1991. And friends, the foundations have all been laid. Gary, you have a website. Could you share that with us?
Yeah, we have a number of revealing articles on this subject on our website that people can read for themselves. And it's at garycaw.org, and that's GaryKah.org, and so I hope people will take the time and check that out.
Right. You're doing a great job. Appreciate it. And again, his DVD, The Coming Globalization, Obama, the Middle East, interfaithism, and the Vatican. Your gift of $15 or more to Save America Ministries will put it in your hands. Just give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or you can get it on our website, saveus.org. Also, his book, The New World Religion. Again, your gift of $15 or more to Save America Ministries will put it in your hands. So you can get it on our website, saveus.org. Speaking of deception, you all are aware of my book that came out a year ago, Seduction of the Saints, that synthesizes many of these things in a series of chapters called The Isms of Our Time, and then moving into how this globalization is coming together in its final expression. So, again, thank you to Gary for joining us here on the program, and I want to urge you to become a partner with us, because day after day we're preparing the way of the Lord for history's final hour. Day after day. And I want to urge you to become a partner with us. This is important, friends. This is ultimate business. This is ultimate business, to proclaim the kingdom of God for such a time as this. Remember, this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached to the whole earth, and then shall the end come. Be part of that. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia 23255. In the middle of it all, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Thanks for joining us. God bless you, and be a blessing.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crossmeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the...
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next 2 hours are going to be the views of Jonathan Gray, who's over in Australia, and we're going to be talking about dead men's secrets and other issues. Jonathan, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Dr. Stan, I'm very pleased to be with you tonight, yes.
Well, of course, it's afternoon over there, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's 3 in the afternoon.
All right, fine. Well, of course, halfway around the world. But anyway, Jonathan has really done some of the most amazing work, amazing studies. He's certainly gone all over the world tracking down stories and going into all sorts of bizarre places to bring you an understanding and to bring me an understanding of the fact that the world is not at all as we assume that it is, that... Well, there have been two wonderful golden ages in the past, but those golden ages are long since gone. And I'm just going to let you sort of pick up the story and tell it, and we can sort of get into more detail as the time goes by. But the idea that there have been two golden eras in the past, and that certainly from then on it was all downhill until recently. Then we've got a lot more knowledge recently, but we're only beginning to approach what was known in eons past. But please go right ahead.
Well, yes, we'll pick that up with the two golden ages then. The ancient races had a knowledge which was quite in harmony with what we find recorded in the Old Testament scriptures. They knew that man had been created by the Supreme One. It was pretty general, generally accepted by all the ancient races that man was created, that he was an intelligently created artifact, divinely planned, organized, and designed, and that he was given laws for his good. Obey these, spiritual laws as well as physical laws. We obey these, we are safe and happy. We disobey them, we suffer. And man had turned his back on the life giver, and so death had come upon him. This was known to all the ancient races. And we find it in their literature. We find it in their poetry. We find it from Babylon to Egypt to Mexico to China. All over the world in the ancient times, people were aware that man had been in an original golden age. He'd fallen from it. He was desperately unable to save himself and help himself, but that there was a coming deliverer promise. Now, that was in the recorded history, both oral and written, of all the races of ancient times. Very interesting that it's not just a biblical thing.
But I think it's so interesting that you point out that there were advanced societies previously, and you certainly one only has to go to Karnak or Luxor, or the places along the Nile, and you see these magnificent temples, and you wonder, well, most people never even stop to wonder, how did they have the technology? How did they have the knowledge to be able to build this perfectly symmetrical, magnificent temples, with in a primitive age? And yet your point is this was not primitive at all. It was very advanced. And from, you go to Egypt today and they go to, into Cairo. It's a dirty it's a city and not an attractive city at all. And, rows and rows and rows of slums. And then you look at those magnificent temples of a bygone era. So something has happened, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. Definitely, we've come down. We haven't come up. And what we're doing today is just rediscovering many things that have been lost, Dr. Stan.
And I think that really is, your writings and certainly your studies have come to the conclusion that there really was this great knowledge available, certainly in the first golden age, in the second golden age. And then that knowledge was lost. Perhaps we're gaining some of it, but we're setting ourselves up for some terrible, terrible times that lie ahead. We'll be back in just a moment here. Will you go ahead and pick up the story?
Yes. All right. As soon as you're ready.
No, it's right now. You go right ahead.
Oh, okay. Right, I then. Well, you want me to go ahead with the Golden Age or with the technology first?
Well, why don't we go ahead with the Golden Age and we'll come back to the technology.
Okay, fine. Now, in the beginning, man was created with high intelligence. He had a feeling for creativity, just like his maker, a feeling to create artifacts and to benefit from them. And that first golden age coincides with the period immediately following his creation. And in the legendary of the ancient world, as well as in the history of the scripture, we have prominent figures in the pre-flood era, from Adam right through to Noah, were remembered with quite a certain degree of reverence. And the Popol Vuh, the sacred book of the Tishi Indians of Guatemala, would record that the first race of men before the flood possessed all knowledge, and they studied the four quarters of heaven and the round surface of the earth. So this shows that the circular or the globular shape of the earth was known right from the very beginning. Just one of the interesting things, sidelights from the ancient Mexicans and Guatemalans. Now, the second golden age coincided with a period immediately following the flood. And traditions would later describe survivors of the Great Flood who were, as it were, like gods compared with those who lived later. That is, they were members of a superior civilization which ceased to exist sometime after the Great Flood. And the Egyptian records would contend that the reign of the gods before the first dynasty of Egypt was one of superior power. So, as we draw the threads together, we find that the gods, as it were, the so-called gods, in quotes, of later nations, were men who'd lived during what they called the Golden Age. There was a Golden Age immediately after creation. There was a second Golden Age immediately after the world flood. And what they called gods were really simply ancestors who were heroes in real life and later on were elevated by people to be higher than that. The family of Adam in the first instance and later the members of the family of Noah. And in keeping with this, all the Greek mythology, the Babylonian mythology, the Egyptian and so on, was built around the core of truth concerning these two ages.
And that really is so fascinating. And people really never stop and think about this. But hang on there. We'll be back in just a moment as we bring all of our stations back on board right now.
Right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Jonathan is just talking about the two golden ages. The first golden age, of course, began with Adam and went right up until the flood. But there were real problems at that time as people turned against God. And then the second golden age came, certainly among Noah and his follower and his children and the people. And there was great knowledge in both of these times. And then, of course, that knowledge was progressively forgotten, and specifically as people increasingly turned away from God. So basically the first golden age, the second golden age. But when you stop and look at some of the magnificent construction that it took place 5,000 years ago, or maybe 5,000 years ago, it's almost unbelievable, the magnificent architecture, knowledge, the ability to build the pyramids. I mean, these things defy imagination today, and we hear of the seven wonders of the world. We only see really a couple of them today. But, you know, the Colossus of Rhodes is long gone, the Temple of Zeus, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, but we still see the ruins of the Temple Diana in Ephesus. We see the Egyptian pyramids. And we wonder, how did they do it? What was the source of their knowledge? So you pick up the story there, Jonathan, please.
Well, we find that immediately after the Great Flood, of course, there was just a few people alive, but it was very rapid, the growth in population. And it has been found through history that when a small group of people are fighting for survival, their population tends to increase greatly. It's an interesting factor. The same thing happened in the early days of Canada when the first people came in, and for a while around the Quebec area there was no immigration coming in, but the people who were first there had been struggling, and they quickly multiplied despite that. And we can assume the same for the time immediately after the flood, that there was a very rapid increase in population. And within 100 years, there could very well be, with the size of the families we know that they had there and their childbearing age, at the very minimum there would have been 25,000 people, and possibly even as many as 1 million people. That might seem incredible and impossible to happen in 100 years, but it can be worked out scientifically, and somewhere between those two figures, I know there's a big disparity between them, there were many thousands, we can say, we can guarantee there were many thousands of people in the first 100 years. So that's interesting.
But of course there was the knowledge, and then a lot of this, of course, where did this knowledge come from? How did these people have the knowledge, the ability to do the amazing things they did?
Well, first of all, you cannot put knowledge into effect until you have enough people to form a culture. So you would need a few thousand people at least before that you can put the knowledge into effect. Now, the races of Egypt, the people of Egypt and the Indus Valley and also the Sumerian plain, all look back to the flood in their racial memory. And they all had many things in common, these three new cultures that arose around about the same time. And there's so many similarities between them that there's no doubt about it that they had a common ex-civilization from which they gained their knowledge. And my conclusion is that this ex-civilization was the one that was wiped out at the time of the flood, but that its information was known to Noah and his family, and they had the ability to pass on to the rapidly growing number of ancestors that they had, children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren. They were able to pass on a lot of this knowledge, scientific, religious, scientific, and cultural knowledge to the family that was dispersing out from the center where they first of all began. And this would account for Egypt starting at the top of its culture. I'm not saying that they started building a pyramid at the top and then went down to ground level, no. What I'm saying is they started with a culture that was superior at the top, and which would later on degenerate. The same with the Sumerian civilization and the Indus Valley and others which later sprang from them. I believe that as they advanced outward from the initial center after the flood, they took with them knowledge that had been handed through the flood by the flood survivors and then bequeathed to their descendants.
And you know, one of the things that most Americans never stop and think, that there were advanced civilizations in South America. I mean,
yes, they were.
And there was advanced civilization on Easter Island. There were advanced civilizations, you know, in China, you know, certainly in ancient times. We never stop and think of these things, but there were advanced civilizations all throughout the world, and you bring that out beautifully in your book, things that we never stop and question. I mean, what happened to these civilizations in the Incas and the Mayas? And we know what happened to the Aztecs, of course, but certainly these other civilizations were just, they just, almost like they just disappeared.
Yes, it was very rapid, the growth of civilization, and they had, as we know, great knowledge to start with, and that great knowledge also, in the wrong hands, can turn into a disaster. Knowledge of nuclear physics and various other things, knowledge that can be put to a harmful use, can destroy civilization. And there is evidence that very soon, within a few hundred years after the flood, several great civilizations had arisen and been wiped out. And this appears to be man-made. There seems to be no question about that. And there were, of course, natural disasters occurring because in the aftermath of the flood, the Earth's crust was settling down and readjusting. The stresses were readjusting to the new loads that had been heaped in different places.
And what you're really suggesting is the time of the flood, there were, you know, mountain ranges rose up. I mean, there you had some mountains that before had been at sea level, or before at least there was no, well, I guess there were seas at that time, but suddenly everything was changed after the flood. There was a tremendous changes that occurred in the topography of the earth at that time. Is that correct?
Absolutely correct, yes. These earth changes were enormous. As a matter of fact, we look at the continents that are now separated, and if you put them together on a smaller globe surface, you will find that they fit together. Not the above sea coastlines as they are today, but the continental shelves around each coastline fit together almost perfectly, which does suggest that they were split up and that something violent did occur. And this is even in the racial memory of mankind, that great land masses separated. And this is not fantasy. It's scientifically possible. Many scientists today look at the possibility of an expanding Earth in the past, where the attraction inside the atoms was actually weakened. And this would cause everything to expand on the surface, including the continental area, which split up. And today we've got the sea between where it used to be land.
So basically, Chris, your book, Dead Man's Secrets, goes into really so many of the amazing secrets and things that these people knew, you know, thousands and thousands of years ago. Some of these things we don't even know how to do today. I mean, certainly, if you've ever seen some of the great rocks that the stones were moved, and they used rollers, you know, and there's just no way that you can explain a lot of these things unless there was some sort of a supernatural intelligence that they were delving into. Would you like to touch a little bit on that?
Yes, I do believe that there was. Well, for a start, let's look at it this way. Albert Einstein made a statement which is generally accepted, that we're using only about 10% of our brain power today. So what happened to the other 90%? Is it that we have degenerated through deterioration over the centuries and over the millennium, we today are not capable of thinking so deeply? The potential was created, we're not using it. And for a start, we might say, well, if men were living longer, if they were healthier back there, the deterioration had not progressed as it has today, and they were using 100% of their brain power and able to live longer to put it into practice, just think of what they could produce. One man could produce in his lifetime, just building upon his own knowledge. Now, we do also have stories coming out from ancient records that the inventions which produced chaos in the world were implanted in man's minds by fallen angels, and that's quite a good possibility as well. But man was given the ability, to start with, by God himself, to accomplish absolute wonders. And he really made them the best of that and did it.
And, of course, you've even suggested that they had knowledge of outer space. They even had knowledge, in some respects, of electricity and many of the other things we know today. Would this be an accurate appraisal? You've even talked about the possibility of some sort of a space vehicle. What was that all about?
Well, yes. Well, first of all, we, to get to the space side of it, we need to, I guess, address the fact that man didn't know the laws of aerodynamics. He could fly with heavier-than-air machines, and there's a lot of evidence that this is so. There are writings from numerous countries about flight, and in some Indian writings there are whole books devoted entirely to flight, and some of these address the subjects of how to, how many passengers you can put in a flying vehicle, that is a certain size for it to go safely, what speed you can go, how far above the earth, what to do if you see another flying vehicle coming toward you, how you can avoid a crash, how you can hear conversations in aircraft that are being propelled by an enemy. All of these things are practical tips that are given that would not be necessary and would not even be thought of unless flight actually was an occurrence.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Jonathan Gray. And it's really a lot of fascinating information from the past, from the ancient past. Well, is there any evidence that man ever, in millennia past, actually was able to fly? We know that I think Leonardo da Vinci had some pictures, about aircraft. But
gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work, it's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey Water Filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a one-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value, plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 3:16 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
Do they have any idea how old this was or how it worked?
We don't know how old it is, but it would be under a pyramid, which is about 3,500 years old.
All right, fine. So that was, what, about 1,500 years before Christ was born?
Yes.
And basically, why did they do this? Did they just want to find out what technology they had at that time?
Well, I'm not sure of the motives. All we know is what happened. But we do know that subsequent to that, a lot of study was done, and one statement was leaked out unofficially, and therefore cannot be confirmed, that they found equipment inside this vehicle that would revolutionize a lot of things we do today.
Well, certainly there's just an explosion of knowledge, and certainly what we can do with computers today, but then people don't really understand that we could not have computers if we didn't have electricity. And the question is, where did Thomas Edison, who really was the pioneer, he along with Tesla and electricity, where did he get his ideas? And of course, most people don't know he was into theosophy, and he used to go into trances. And have you ever heard those stories, Jonathan?
Yes, I have.
Well, you're one of the few people who has, so could you elaborate on that? Because this is what I think is so difficult for people to understand, is that there is knowledge out there, not necessarily knowledge that we would benefit from, or we might benefit temporarily, but these might be things that God doesn't want us to know, but they're here now. We use them almost dependent upon them every day upon our computers. And yet, of course, the question is this a good thing? Are there possible serious consequences that are coming ahead? But you mentioned you'd heard these stories about Thomas Edison and certainly going into trances and getting this information.
Yes, I have heard of that. And that, of course, would back up something in one of the old books, non-biblical books, which says that the fallen angels imparted the knowledge of technology to mankind. And that, of course, would be compatible with the record in Genesis that the two lines, the line of Cain and the line of Seth, were very different in their behavior. The line of Seth was spiritual, more spiritually orientated, the line of Cain more physically orientated, and they built technology, they built cities. The first recorded city was built by Cain. His descendants are recorded in Genesis chapter 4 as inventing this and inventing that, and the first school of metallurgy is mentioned there, a man by Tubal Cain, not only doing these things but teaching them. And these were the people who were concentrating on technology rather than on spiritual values, and these are the men who brought the world down almost to destruction before the Great Flood.
And, you know, today we see there are certain religious sects, the Mennonites, the Amish. They say, we don't want to be part of your advanced electronic society. And you go back to Missouri, and you'll see the Mennonites there on Sunday with their horse-drawn carriages, and they live a very, very simple life close to the earth, and they produce their food, and this is the way they want to live their life. They certainly don't use electricity. They use kerosene, lamps, things of that sort. But we live a wonderful utopian life. But the question is, are there going to be consequences for the affluent society that we're using today, and are we living as God would have us live?
Oh, we're certainly not, I believe. Otherwise, the world would not be in the mess it is right now.
That's so true. Well, anyway, of course, certainly we find this information was certainly known to many of the ancients. Do you think they knew anything about electricity or some of the things we know about today?
Well, yes. If we go to Egypt, we find pictures on some of the temple walls let me go something else earlier than that. If you go into some of the untouched tombs that have just been opened, and also tunnels and passageways in under mountains in the Valley of the Kings and the Valley of the Queens, where tourists have not been coming in and where atmosphere has not been spoiling the ancient paintings, you go right into the inner recesses where sunlight never reaches, never could reach, and you see brilliant colours and designs and pictures all over the walls, which could only have been produced in something like daylight or electrical light, and even by using mirrors to reflect light from outside into those recesses, it doesn't work, you can't see. So there had to be some light source, and it has not left any smoke on the ceiling. It's a smokeless source of light.
Well, there are a lot of things that people don't understand, but we know that they had tremendous knowledge they had to have for the construction. And it really wasn't until I started talking to Jonathan, reading his things, I looked back to Karnak and Luxor and these magnificent temples there along the Nile and realized that there was a great intelligence behind them. We'll be right back. Dr. Stan back here, and of course our guest is Jonathan Gray, and you know, for the average American, it was very difficult to imagine, but you know, 120 years ago, the major source of transportation was still the horse, and certainly a little over, maybe over 107 years ago was the first time that there was any flight by man. But in this intervening 100, 110, 120 years has been just a phenomenal increase in knowledge, and we live a very comfortable, affluent life. But are there consequences to what's going on today? Are we perhaps tapping into knowledge that we should not be tapping into? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, yes, I think we are. There's nothing wrong with knowledge per se. However, we are not spiritually capable, I think, of handling a lot of it, because the people who are in charge of the knowledge, generally speaking, are more inclined to think about themselves rather than think about the rest of us. And therefore, it's going to be used selfishly. And nuclear power can be used for peaceful purposes, or it can be used to destroy mankind. Television can be used to educate us, or it can be used to degrade us so that we lose feeling for other people by watching too much violence and sex and so on. We everything gets perverted in our minds. So the medium itself is neutral, but in our hands today, most of us can't cope with it because most of us don't know God and don't love one another. And that's where the problem is. We bring disaster upon ourselves by its use.
Well, it's wonderful to hear you, of course, coming at this from a spiritual point of view. We hear a lot of people talk about all these mystical things, but of course they're coming at it from a secular point of view, and the idea that that all this knowledge came from outer space, that UFOs came from outer space, but they do not understand the spiritual implications of what's taking place today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course Jonathan Gray is coming from a Christian point of view. And so many times when we talk about these things, you'll hear them on many of the programs here in the United States. And, of course, everybody likes to hear about mysteries and certainly of these secret forces that are out there working behind the scenes and the ability to materialize and dematerialize and the UFOs and other crop circles and certainly so many of these supernatural manifestations that really are there. But, of course, the explanation is never the true one, because certainly here in America, we've more or less, as a whole, rejected the spiritual concepts, that the fact that everything really goes back to God and to this eternal battle that goes on between good and evil. Well, could we touch a little bit on UFOs? Because, of course, everybody's intrigued by them. I mean, we have all sorts of books written, hundreds and hundreds of books about UFOs. And some people say that it's a total fraud. Some people say they came from outer space. That's the usual thing. The government's covering up the information because they don't want the people to be frightened with the knowledge that there really are aliens out there. And of course, they would be frightened if they knew that we were having these visits from alien civilizations and other planets in the solar system or perhaps within the universe. How do you respond when people come up with this sort of an explanation for what's going on?
Well, I like to quote one of the most authoritative and respected UFO researchers in the world, because that gives an opening then to start listening rather than from a biblical perspective. There are many people who will not accept the biblical perspective, but they'll accept the New Age UFO investigator and what he says, and I think that's a good jumping point. A fellow by the name of Hynek, and his name was Alan Hynek. He was a scientific consultant for U.S. Air Force on Project Blue Book. And his instructions were to study UFO reports and determine whether an astronomical object, such as the Moon or the planet Venus, for example, might explain them. Now, Blue Book listed over 12,000 reports, of which 700 could not be explained. And it concluded that UFOs did not pose a threat to national security, and didn't bother to say what they were, and that by that means they thought they got themselves off the hook. And later the Condon report announced the same conclusion. Now, Hynek was a UFO skeptic at the start, but he became convinced that a certain percentage of claimed sightings were worthy of serious study. So he founded what was called the Center for UFO Studies. And with him was the now famous UFO researcher Jacques Vallée. Now, Hynek and Vallée considered that where there was smoke, there was fire. There certainly were UFOs, no problem with that. But what they began to discover was that it had not just physical aspect, but paranormal aspect to it. Now, Hynek actually stated this. He said, look, we're seeing too many UFOs. The Earth's only a spot of dust in the universe. Why should we be honored with so many visits? And when he was asked what his hypothesis was, he said, I'm more inclined to think in terms of something meta-terrestrial, a sort of parallel reality. And he went on to say to Newsweek magazine that this may be a psychic phenomena and the aliens may not come from outer space but from a parallel reality. Well, now that opens up a totally new possibility.
It certainly does. And I think Jacques Millet had said something very similar to that, that this was a metaphysical phenomenon. Of course, neither one of these people were coming from a Christian point of view. They just realized, of course, that you could not explain what was going on purely from a physical or material point of view. There had to be, you know, some sort of invisible force that was out there.
That was their conclusion, yes. And then they gave examples of it. Dr. Stan, they talked about, for example, where in some instances two distinctly different UFOs hovering in a clear sky will converge and eventually merge into the one object. Now, that is something that an ordinary physical object cannot do. They also drew attention to the fact that UFOs can materialize out of nowhere suddenly, just suddenly start becoming visible, and then they dematerialize again. Now, most people are not aware that these things are happening. They think a UFO is just a physical object that comes and that people from outer space, because this is what some are trying to tell us. But the weight of evidence does suggest that these are not primarily physical but spiritual manifestations. You might call them a manipulation of mass and energy, which is quite scientific and can be understood.
And I think,
in other words, another dimension.
And I think this is one reason why the government specifically tries to give us the idea, oh, where it's not there at all, and of course it's very obvious the government's suppressing the truth. And certainly then you begin to get, well, yes, yeah, there is something there, but they don't want us to know. They don't want us to be frightened or to realize they're from outer space. No, the thing is, the official policy is we do not want the public to know that there is another dimension. There's a spiritual dimension to everything going on in the world today. That is certainly, I think, one of the most careful kept secrets, and I think that you bring this out very well in your writings and the things that you're doing, and this is why it's so vitally important that people understand there is another dimension. If there's another dimension, a spiritual dimension, we certainly be aware of it, and of course, how would we protect ourselves other than, of course, to be totally reliant upon God, which is what I believe he really wants us to be.
Yes, he does. With him, we're totally safe. Without him, anything can happen.
And that's really what's so hard for people to understand, is that there is an unseen, invisible reality out there, that we live in a material world, but there's an invisible world. There's a material world, a mystical world, a substantial world, a spiritual world, a visible world, an invisible world, a tangible world, an intangible world. So how are we going to get people to understand that if you don't believe in God? This all sounds pretty far out.
Yeah, sure does. A couple of other UFO researchers, Ankerberg and Weldon, asked a very pointed question. How credible is it to think that literally thousands of extraterrestrials would fly millions or billions of light years simply to teach New Age philosophy, deny Christianity, and support the occult, because that's what they're doing?
I know John Ankerberg. He's a great guy, and certainly he's done a lot of great. He and Weldon did a lot of great research on these things, and I think we should heed what they say. But I think that to most people, there's so many other things to be concerned about, and yet I think this is the very crux of everything going on in the world today, and people really don't understand.
It's true. Yeah, we're in the middle of a great drama going on, I believe. And this is a drama between good and evil. This earth, may I say, has been hijacked. And we're caught up in this drama. And both sides are vying for our loyalty. And we have to make our decision whether we follow God or whether we follow the enemy that wants to wrest us from his control.
Well, the enemy is doing a pretty good job right now, but of course our job is not to worry about the outcome. Our job is just to do our best and to obey the Lord and try to make people aware of what this is about, because once they accept the Lord, their whole life changes.
It certainly does. And we don't have to worry what's coming in the future. All we have to know is who is it that holds the future.
Amen to that. Well, certainly the UFOs, and certainly there are all these amazing stories about Roswell. And what's your take on Roswell? Certainly this was the first well-known UFO sighting here, and people say, oh, well, you know, it was just weather balloons. But other people say there really was a craft there. There really were remnants of the craft. There really were dead beings inside there. Do you have any take on that at all?
Well, yes, I did quite a bit of research on this. We do know that after World War II, there was a rapid growth in technology and nuclear rivalry between the USA and the Soviet Union. And we also know from official documents released only in recent years that there was a project, it's called Top Secret 1A. It was being conducted, and it was also known as Project Mogul. And this entailed an array of 23 balloons designed to reflect radar as well as monitor acoustic emissions from around the world. And these were required to float high in the stratosphere. Now, their main purpose was to detect suspected Soviet nuclear tests. Now, basically, the radar reflectors were huge metal foil kites made with sticks. They called them the Rowan targets. And the toy company that made the kites also used reinforcing tape to hold them together. Now, the balloons themselves, they were fashioned from neoprene rubber and equipped with low-frequency microphones, a sonar buoy, aluminium tube, rings and battery packs. Now, on June the 4th, 1947, from Alamogordo Army Airfield in New Mexico, Mogul Flight 4 was launched. Now, this was not very far southwest of Roswell. As a result of exposure to the sun, some of the balloons burst, and then, as the battery power ran down, the military lost contact only 17 miles from the eventual crash site. Now, information about this top-secret project remained classified for more than 40 years. And at that time, the rocket and satellite technology did not exist. So Project Mogul was used, actually, at that time to listen to the enemy. That's the only way they could do it. Now, why would it be mistaken for a flying saucer? And you might wonder how a collection of paper, sticks, foil and rubber could ever be mistaken for a flying saucer. Well, it's a long story, but a substantial body of documentation provides straightforward evidence of what happened. And the claimed bodies that were kept in a secret place known as Hangar 18, and at first said to be at the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, because the US government has always denied its existence, and the mention of Hangar 18 always raises implications of a cover-up by ufologists. But in 1984, another UFO researcher, Jamie Shandura, found a roll of unprocessed film planted at his door. And he called William Moore, who was co-author of the Roswell incident, and they had the film developed. And on the film were photos of what were claimed to be top-secret government documents, allegedly proving that the government had collected crashed flying saucers from Roswell and elsewhere. They also got later documentation from another source. And then in 1994, another roll of film came into the hands of another Roswell conspiracy author. Now, we've got here some interesting proof coming into their hands, which said that not only did the government know about UFOs, but they'd conspired to cover up the truth. Now, I could go on with some of these reports, but these alleged documents and these alleged pieces of proof that went into the book have since been analysed and found to be forgeries, every single one of them.
Well, in other words, somebody was trying to mislead these people to really believe that the government was covering up the UFOs. Is that correct?
Yes, they were.
In other words,
they had some reason to do this, and it's interesting that it was successful. It's still successful in the minds of many today.
Yeah, but the thing is that they're playing games with our reality. They're playing games with our mind. They really mold what we think, and they can come up with these artificial stories and then distort what we think and by saying, oh, yes, the government's covering it up. And we do know the government's covering things up. But what are they covering up is the question.
That is the big question.
And but there's no question in your mind that there really are UFOs, is there?
Oh, there are UFOs for sure, yes. I mean, a UFO is simply an unidentified flying object.
Right.
And people put out their theories, and these theories become facts in the minds of many people.
But you believe that these are demonic manifestations, supernatural?
Absolutely. There's so many parallels, so many... Well, you know, when police are looking to identify a man who's done a series of burglaries or a series of murders and so on, what they look at is modus operandi, isn't that right?
Right.
A method they use, and when they lay them all out, they then begin to come into a picture. It's a pattern that they develop. Now, I would like to suggest, and I can prove this, that the modus operandi of the UFOs parallels the modus operandi of spiritualistic seances. I have discovered so many points of parallel, and maybe some of these we could just list off and describe.
Well, go right ahead.
Well, first of all, aliens appear temporally as physical beings. And although it sounds unbelievable, there's a reality we have to face. Aliens can be present with us in an invisible state and then make themselves even only partly visible.
But are they aliens or are they really demonic beings or fallen angels?
Demonic beings, because in seances, the very same thing happens. So when I mention, say, aliens, I would like to, say, put aliens in inverted commas. So-called aliens appear in the same form as so-called spirits in seances. Now, we know that angels are spirits, and they can be visible or invisible, and we know that demonic spirits have that power, that the rebellious ones still have that ability, the fallen angels. Now, so-called aliens appear in any number of guises and shapes, and they also have the ability to use their minds to project physical images for us to see. So we think we're seeing something when we're not. Now, the same goes on in a spiritualistic seance, where a spirit suddenly appears. He can become a beautiful woman. He can become a roaring cat. He can become anything whatsoever, a serpent, anything at all. And so outer space so-called aliens have appeared in all these shapes as well. And they can change shape in front of a person. This is not generally known. They can visibly change shape in front of you, from one shape into another shape, the so-called alien and the seance spirit. The so-called aliens can appear as beings of light. Now, Lucifer means light-bearer, shining one. And not only do UFOs commonly manifest as objects of light, but contactees have described some aliens as changing into beings of light and giving an illusion of what we might say a divine encounter. Another thing is both aliens, so-called aliens from outer space, and the spirits and seances can pass through walls. So there's just a few physical similarities.
And of course the thing is that you cannot do this in the material world. But when you're dealing with the things, beings from the other dimension, they're interdimensional, so they really do not have to follow the laws of physics or the laws of matter. Well, our guest is Jonathan Gray. Oh, well, during the next hour, we'll open up our lines if you have a question at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And so if you have a question for Jonathan, give us a call. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Jonathan, we have 3 more minutes to this segment of the program, so please continue with your thoughts, because I think this is so vitally important that people understand that when we're dealing with the supernatural, we're dealing with beings.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm
tell everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.com.
Great deal of information. How could people get in touch with you?
Thank you. Well, my main website is www.beforeus.com. BEFOREUS.com. And they can enroll in the free weekly newsletter at that website as well.
And I get that newsletter every week. It's fascinating. It always covers something very often up to date. I've only been taking it for maybe 6 weeks now, but all sorts of fascinating information you won't learn elsewhere. You won't hear elsewhere. It really gives you an entirely different view of the world we live in today, and written from a Christian perspective, which is so unique, going, of course, into the supernatural forces that we face today. Well, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty, my ministry, is primarily listener-supported. If you're in a position to help us, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. And if you're one of those many people out there who's having very difficult times and isn't capable of helping financially, why, please pray for our ministry, for our provision and protection, our family, our staff, because we're on the front lines of this truly spiritual battle. Is 5 hours a day. And then again on our weekend program, where we're trying to educate the American people about the true nature of this spiritual battle. Now, we don't want you to forget about our all-day conference. It's going to be on the 17th of October at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course and on the north shore of Monterey Bay, the beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. So if you are interested in coming, if you're coming from a distance and you want to book overnight accommodations, why, the Aptos Seascape Inn has an excellent the Seacliff Inn has excellent accommodations, but the reduced rate will only be available for another, 10 days. So if you're going to do something, either call us at 1-800-544-8927, and we'll get the information to you so you can make your reservations. And then, of course, we suggest you will want to get our book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, because it will take you into an understanding of the true nature of this spiritual battle that is being fought today. And it is a spiritual battle, and unless you understand that, nothing makes sense. We have a talk going into it's called The Secret. It's a talk I gave to the Granada Forum. As you begin to introduce people into this other dimension that people can tap into, and there is great wealth and prosperity and fame available for those who tap into it, but at a terrible, terrible price. And we warn you to avoid this like you would the plague or like smallpox. And certainly there is this other force that's out there. We have a great DVD, and if you haven't seen it, it's called They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. You can get the 3-hour, the 4-hour, or the 10-hour version of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. We think it's very important that you understand that many of the people in the music industry and the entertainment industry have made a pact, and they have had great wealth, but you notice how many of them die at a very young age, a very tragic death. And you can, I think, certainly to the people you equate with the music industry, these great stars, but how many of them died very, very young under very strange circumstances? Because there is a price to pay when you first sell your soul for fame and fortune. Again, the number 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And, of course, we recommend certainly that you go to Jonathan's website. Once more, is that beforeus.com?
Beforeus.com.
Beforeus.com. You'll find fascinating information there. And I think you'll be fascinated to get Jonathan's book. It's entitled Dead Men's Secrets, because there are secrets out there that have been suppressed, and when you begin to understand how this fits together, it all begins to make sense. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment, but we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, because this is a spiritual battle, but please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and protection. This is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest is Jonathan Gray. And if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Jonathan, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But as I read, of course, what Jonathan has written, suddenly the awareness that at one time in the ancient past, there was a common knowledge all throughout the world. It was knowledge that was certainly in Egypt and certainly in Samaria. It was in South America. It was in China. It was on Easter Island. And there was a connection between all of these civilizations. Would that be a fair appraisal of it?
Yes, that would be quite accurate. The pattern worldwide shows that it was a global thing.
And, of course, there was great knowledge. And what is the significance of those strange heads that they have on Easter Island? Do you have any idea what they've represented?
No, that's still a mystery. But speculations, of course. I don't like to go into speculation, but I have to say I don't know the answer to that one.
Well,
we do know is that they were very heavy to lift, and they had to require better than we can do today.
But basically, was there a fairly advanced civilization there on Easter Island?
Yes, most definitely. It was very similar to the civilizations found elsewhere in the world, and even the written signs show that there was a universal language at the beginning, and the whole world was of one language. Easter Island shows that.
Well, because, you know, we don't pay much attention to China, you know. Well, that's way over there, and we're sort of backward. And, well, they're becoming suddenly coming into the world now. They're the world's second largest economy. But, of course, at one time in the ancient past, China was really a great and marvelous civilization, wasn't it?
Oh, China was a magnificent civilization, and they had everything that every other nation had. They had everything right up to space travel. Everything we've got today, they had then, by all appearances.
In fact, they had gunpowder long before before Europe had it.
Yes.
Now, what was the means of communication? Do we have any idea how people communicated? Was it simply by travel, by horseback? Or do you think they had anything more sophisticated in the ancient times?
Well, we do know that air travel was pretty frequent. We know that they had ships that could go across the world, and these ships could accommodate hundreds and hundreds of people. We know that they also had means of communication, which appears to be radio and what we would call television today, and elements of these have been found. In China, remains of sets which work something like a television set does today, but yet done by a different method, have been found. So we not only have oral legends, we have written records, we also have some physical objects that have been found from time to time. Some of the old writings in the Middle East talk about a man carrying something on his chest which could answer him. In other words, he'd speak to somebody, he'd get an answer back. Well, that's a bit like a cell phone today.
Well, you know, certainly we don't think much of ancient Sumeria, but ancient Sumeria had a very advanced civilization and magnificent old temples there and cities where are they in Syria today?
There are old temples in Syria, Asia, Egypt, mainly that area, yeah.
And people don't even think of Sumeria, but it was an extremely well-developed civilization. What was that, about 3,000 years before Christ, 2,500 years, do we know?
Yes, about 2,200 years before Christ, about the same as Egypt. I've revised my dating a little bit because of the evidence is that it's come a little bit later. That's fine. The same events are there. The timing might be a little bit different, but the facts haven't changed.
Well,
they did have all that.
When were the pyramids actually built?
There's a dating within the Great Pyramid which suggests it was in the third millennium BC, about 2200.
About 2200 BC then?
Yes, which is different from the 2680 or 2860 that is traditionally accepted, but the evidence does point to it being around about 2200.
All right, hold on, we'll be right back. Well, certainly, you know, when we look at it, certainly the flood was what, about 600 years after Adam and Eve?
1600 years after, yes.
1600 years, so then that first golden period lasted for 1600 years?
Yes, it did. So they had plenty of time to develop tremendous technology. And about 300 years before the flood, Tubal-Cain was doing his smelting and teaching it in schools of metallurgy. So when we consider what we've accomplished in the last 300 years, what did they accomplish in their last 300 years?
And so there was really a very advanced civilization at that time. But what was it that happened that God chose to destroy this civilization? Was it that they had rejected him? Was it just simply only one family that was still loyal to God at that time? We hear the story of the flood, and apparently this is repeated in all the writings of all the civilizations about this great flood. Do all the people in Sydney in the world that you've been able to find trace their origin back to Noah?
Yes, they do. The three main branches of the human race, which we have today, actually all have legends, and some of them actually have unbroken chronologies, father to son to son to son, all the way back to Noah, or, if not Noah himself, one of the three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. So, European, Asian, African, all trace they're not their ancestry back to Noah's family. We've got records in our hands today for that.
And, of course, I mean, this is very difficult for people to believe, but then, of course, here we have then about 1,600 years after Adam and Eve, we have a new civilization develops, a new golden age. And so this idea that there were the two golden ages, tremendous building capacity, tremendous knowledge, then why was this knowledge lost? Why was the civilizations destroyed? Or was the knowledge lost when the civilizations were destroyed?
Well, you know, if you take America today as being the greatest civilization on Earth, as far as knowledge goes and capacity, if America was wiped out, God forbid, but if America was wiped out today, most of the world would deteriorate as far as their technology and their knowledge went. If the world's great leading civilizations, say Europe, America, Russia, and so on, China, were wiped out, little countries like New Zealand and Australia, and then the islands of the Pacific, their technology would just drop down, because it's the larger nations, the ones with the greatest technology, the most sophisticated ones, that keep the world going. And
hold that thought here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess, of course, it's Jonathan Cray, and I was simply proposing, you know, what happened to the great knowledge that was in Samaria, in ancient Samaria, in ancient Babylon, in ancient Egypt, you know? And Jonathan says, you know, when you destroy the civilization, why, of course, knowledge is lost. And using the analogy of what would happen if America were to be destroyed. America is the center of knowledge and advance and technology today. And if America were to be destroyed, the rest of the world would simply collapse, you know, and we would not have the support, the technology, the ability, at least not maybe later on they'd be able to survive, but with India and China. But right now, America is the center of all of this, and suddenly if America were to go tomorrow, why, the world and the smaller nations would be more or less plunged into chaos. Would that be a fair appraisal?
Yes, it would be a very good appraisal. And the nations that have the greatest technology and the highest sophistication also have the greatest capacity for destruction and self-destruction. And therefore, there would be very little left. And those who escaped it would go bush, go into the forest or wherever they could, away from civilization, with the memory of what had been, but with not the capacity to restore it anymore.
Well, now, basically, do we have any idea what happened to the Sumerian civilization? Was it war? Was it pestilence? Was it a plague? What was the destroyed Sumeria?
Sumeria actually went down when other civilizations went down, more or less at the same time. There is evidence in the Middle East of a nuclear explosion in the past. And we don't know all the details of it because a lot of it has been erased from the records. But there appears to have been a nuclear war several hundred years after the civilizations sprang up, which wiped out some of the greatest knowledge of the time. Egypt was not affected. Egypt continued on. But Egypt also descended downwards. The greatest time was in the beginning for all of these civilizations.
Well, did Egypt begin to fail after the Jews left Egypt when Moses took them out and then the Egyptian army was destroyed as they were trying to cross the Red Sea? Or was that a pivotal issue with Egypt, or did they continue to survive and prosper up till the time of Cleopatra?
Well, actually, Egypt went down from what it had been after the Exodus, but not down as far as it descended after the time of Cleopatra. There were stages in its demise. Egypt today is not recognized as a first world country at all. It's considered a third world country, yet it was the superpower of its day before the time of Moses. And although not the superpower in the time of Cleopatra, it was very strong still, but not nearly as strong as it was before the Exodus.
And then, of course, after Cleopatra, of course, then Rome took over the country, and then it was when Rome was destroyed, why they just sort of shifted back to become a second-rate nation. And yet, at one time, they were one of the greatest nations of the world. And this seems to be the pattern of civilizations. Do we have any idea what destroyed the Inca civilization or the Mayan civilization?
Well, the Inca civilization was just an echo of what we call today the pre-Inca civilization. That was the greatest of all. The Inca roads, for example, were built by the pre-Incas before the Incas came along. And the Incas were blessed with the ability to inherit what this previous civilization had left behind. It was the Spanish conquistadors who brought the Inca civilization to its end officially, although it was in decline at the time of their arrival. The same goes for the Mayas. They were already in decline when the Spaniards came, but they really collapsed after the Spanish conquest. So the Spaniards actually had a great deal to do with the demise of those two great civilizations.
Well, of course, you know, Sydney, the magnificent towns, magnificent cities, magnificent temples there, and so now they're just all suddenly consumed by the jungles in many areas, aren't they?
And so beautifully done, much much more beautiful than civilizations elsewhere in the world. The Americas had beautiful structure, and the people were very artistic, and they had very very high astronomical knowledge and mathematical ability. They were great people, but we don't hear too much about them today because they're virtually today the descendants of the Mayans and to a large extent those of the Incas. You wouldn't call them jungle savages, but they're comparatively primitive in the way they live compared to their ancestors even 400 years ago.
And of course, you know, you write in your book about the tremendous knowledge they had of astrology of astronomy and of the stars and the mathematical ability that these people had, and this is all the records are still there. We know that they existed, and yet those civilizations are like yesterday's sunset, gone forever. Well, let's go to Duke, who's calling us from Texas. Duke, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I have a question for both of y'all to kind of put your heads together to kind of answer this one. If we go back to the Bible, and it talks about the Tower of Babel, where God confused man's tongue, could there be a correlation there with this while we don't understand this today?
All right, fine. I think that Duke's question, is there a correlation between what happened there at the time of Nimrod and the Tower of Babel to what's going on today? What would your thoughts be?
Oh, I see some uncanny parallels, yes, most definitely. It's interesting that the European community has made one of its mottos a united language. In other words, they've also put a big poster up with the Tower of Babel on it, and they are trying to imitate what they did at Babel on a European scale, and the world government. Nimrod wanted the world government. He wanted the whole thing under his control, and history tells us that Nimrod went and conquered others who didn't want him until he overcame them, and I do believe that the European unity will partake of the same spirit as the Tower of Babel. Just wait on the days coming ahead. I think we're going to see some big things happening from Europe.
And, Duke, if you go to Strasbourg today, there's a building there that where the European Parliament meets. And it is constructed as a replica of the incomplete Tower of Babel. They know exactly what's going on. The average European has no idea. The average Englishman doesn't have any idea. The average American doesn't understand. But you're absolutely right. The parallels are not simply frightening. They're absolute. I mean, we are seeing, like deja vu all over again, the reconstitution of the effort of man to reconstitute the world, you know, in certainly in violation of God's desired God's purpose. Anything else, Duke, before we let you go?
Well, along the same subject, if you look at the go to build that Lebanon and look at the stones and the pyramids and just all over the world, all the pyramids, and there was a lost knowledge there, and of course, mainstream media teaches that it was aliens, and I believe that we once had a knowledge there, and then at the Tower of Babel, that was destroyed, and that's why we can't understand today.
Well, I think you really will enjoy reading Jonathan Gray's book, Dead Men's Secrets, and we will be carrying that. We have a shipment of them coming in from Jonathan's publisher here in the United States. They haven't arrived yet, but we will be carrying the book, Dead Men's Secrets. You will really enjoy it because it's exactly what you're saying. The knowledge was there. It was lost. Hey, thanks very much for calling, Duke. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Duke. I really enjoyed your program, and God bless.
God bless. And our telephone number, again, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Go right ahead, Jonathan. I think you were going to say something.
Thank you, Duke, for raising a very interesting question. The past is a lesson book for the future, and we have nothing to fear for the future so long as we remember how God has led us in the past. But we have a lot to fear for the future if we go the ways of our ancestors and don't let the Lord God take charge.
Someone once said the past is prologue, and I think that there is no better explanation of what's going on today than we have to study the past to see how this is all playing out today, because so many of the things going on just don't make sense. Unless you understand that there is a plan and it's being fulfilled, and it is to flaunt God's law and to try to reconstitute the ancient Babylon and to rebuild the temple of Babel in violation of God's law. And I believe God's going to bring a terrible judgment on the world. Certainly, I don't believe that anyone is going to survive, or very few people survive without God's protection. And certainly, that doesn't necessarily mean that if you believe in the Lord, you're not going to go through terrible times. You may even die, but at least you know we're going to spend eternity. The other people really have no hope at all.
Well, that's the good news. We have eternity to look forward to, whereas so many don't. That's the sad story.
Well, our job, of course, is to reach as many people as you can, and I'm sure that this is one reason for your ministry. You must have people all throughout the world who are getting your emails and getting your material.
Well, my passion is that they will see the benefit of archaeology, not just as a story of the past, but as an opening to our behavior from now on. We must not repeat the mistakes of the past. We must turn to the Lord, because the time is getting short for us to do it.
Amen to that. Well, you know, Cynthia, you certainly have done some of the most amazing work in archaeology and study and your travels to the Holy Land, and certainly following the path of Ron Wyatt and the things that he had uncovered, and then, of course, developing many of these things on your own. And certainly one of the most fascinating stories you tell, and I've seen your video, where, of course, you go to Sodom and Gomorrah and the five towns on the west bank of the Jordan River that, you know, suddenly represented the civilization, that well-advanced civilization that lived in that area, which is just totally desolate. And you know, one of the most interesting things, I've been to the Holy Land 6 times, and we've been to Masada 3 or 4 times. Nobody ever really shows you where Sodom and Gomorrah is. Don't certainly the guides, doesn't somebody over there know what you and Ron Wyatt were able to determine?
Some do and some don't. There are some buses that go down from Jerusalem from time to time and take the tourists to the remains of Gomorrah and stop in the ruins while they encourage people to go looking for sulfur balls.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. You go right ahead, because I think this is important.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think it really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a one-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 316 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
Abraham was a Sydney, lived in what we call the Holy Land today, and when, of course, he went to get his cousin Lot and got him out of Sodom, certainly before the destruction came. And there was simply a tremendous heat, and the whole city was consumed. I guess the heat came from the sulfur balls. They didn't all burn, and they are still there. Do you have some of the sulfur balls, Jonathan?
Oh, yes, we have some here at our place, and whenever I go out to take a lecture, I'll always take one, and I'll burn it in front of the audience and give them a chance to smell it and see the blue flame coming out from it. It always elicits great interest.
Well, I would love to see it sometime. And anyway, Pierce, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Our guest is Jonathan Gray from Australia, and we've got Joe calling from New Jersey. Hi, Joe. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. Hi, fellas. Hi, Jonathan.
Hello, John.
I have this particular question for you. I heard you mention that the Great Pyramids at the Giza Plateau, there are three of them there, isn't that right?
Yes.
Okay, now, I did think you mentioned something that it had been asserted that these pyramids were supposedly built sometime around B.C. 2000 or something like that.
Yeah, around about 2200, just a few years after that, actually.
Okay, now here's my question to you. You probably are aware of this. If not, I'm going to just ask you this. These three pyramids, Is it true that they do align with Orion's belt at some time in the past? Are you aware of that?
Yes, I'm aware of that theory, and I have written on this theory, extensively researched it. The problem with the theory is this, that at the time of the Great Flood, which we placed at round about 4,500 years ago, and there's good evidence to confirm this from about 11 or 12 different sources, all very different, but all converging to give one strong evidence of the date of the flood, is that at that time the Earth was tilted on its axis, which means that anyone at Giza, where the pyramids are, would be looking at a different part of the sky 10,000 BC than what is calculated today from the present position of the Earth if they were before the flood.
I'm sorry, Jonathan. Could you please mention that something about the tilting of the Earth would have given us a different perspective of the heavens because of the flood at what BC?
I placed the flood today round about 2,500 years BC.
Okay, the flood.
Yes. In round figures, say 2,500 years BC, right? Now,
okay.
10,000 BC would be before that. It would be before the tilting of the axis. I mean, I don't believe it goes back that far, but if it did, it would be before the tilting of the axis, which means that what we're doing today by saying that they line up with the stars of Orion, that is presuming that there hasn't been no tilting of the axis. But we know there was a tilting of the axis, and that disrupts that.
How do
theory.
We know that? How do we know there's a tilting of the axis?
It's a long scientific report, but what we have evidence that the Earth was tilted. A royal astronomer with the Adelaide Observatory in South Australia spent 30 years of his life looking at positions of the sun as against positions on the Earth and against the sky, going back hundreds and hundreds of years into the past from observations made all over the world in history which have been recorded. And this shows that the Earth was recovering now, spinning like a top, but gradually recovering from a tilting which went as far as 26 degrees at a certain date in the past. And that date actually corresponds with the date of the flood from other sources and from the book of Genesis.
Basically, were the pyramids to be tombs, or were they really have spiritual significance in their alignment?
The original pyramids, those pyramids were not built to be tombs to start with.
In other words, basically, we've been told a lot of things that just aren't true. Joe, thank you so very much for calling. Very good question, and I hope maybe you'll get hold of the website there, beforeus.com, and get all of these materials.
I'd like to ask Jonathan...
Well, we're going to a break here. Thanks very much for calling, and call later if you'd like. Dr. Stan, our guest is Jonathan Gray. We have Barbara calling from Santa Cruz. Barbara, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. And it's a pleasure to have Jonathan on. My first question is, Jonathan, how far, I guess would be south, would Sodom and Gomorrah be from Masada?
Sodom and Gomorrah, actually Gomorrah is due east of Masada. If you get to Masada and you look down in the direction of the Dead Sea, you'll see large white areas almost at your feet between the Sardar cliffs and the Dead Sea, and that is what is left of Gomorrah.
Which side of the
Sodom
road?
Is about 20 miles further south, behind Mount, to the west of Mount Sodom.
Well, where is it? Is it to the west of the road there, or is it the east of the road?
It's to the west of the road, but to the east of Masada itself.
I
between Masada on the west and the road on the east.
All right, fine. So it's somewhere down in that area then.
Yes.
All right, fine. And Sydney, that you mentioned that it is white in comparison with the ground, which is sort of brownish.
The desert all around is brown, and the remains of the city are white.
All right, Barbara, is there anything else you'd like to ask?
Okay. Now, what, and the sulfur balls, approximately what are the size of those?
Well, the average size we've been picking up are about the size of a large marble or a small golf ball. But they do vary in size. In fact, I have measured a crater in one of the remains of the building, a crater that was about 1.5 feet across. And that was a crater made by a sulfur ball coming out of the sky, but then it was much larger.
Okay. Is there any possibility that any of these sulfur balls could have gone into Jordan?
Into Jordan, you mean the country of Jordan?
Yes, right. On the other side of the...
southern portion of Jordan?
Yes, there is. It appears that there was also destruction on the other side at the... where it's called the Lisan, L-I-S-I-N, the tongue that comes out into the Dead Sea.
Hold that thought for just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is Barbara calling from Santa Cruz. She was asking the exact site of I guess it was at Gomorrah, and that was simply just almost due east of Masada and certainly west of the road there. And then, of course, Barbara was asking if there may have been some of the destruction on the other side of the Dead Sea, on the Jordan side of the Dead Sea, and Sydney... Jonathan was saying, yes, there was evidence that there was destruction. There were cities on the other side as well.
It appears to have been related to Gomorrah, but it was on the other side of, well, there's a little bit of water comes down from the Dead Sea onto a shallow area to the south, and then there's a tongue of land that sticks out from Jordan, and on that tongue there is an area that appears to have contained buildings that were turned to ash as well.
Okay, Barbara, does that answer your question?
Well, yes, it does. The reason I'm asking is because if you go driving through the southern part of Jordan, you look out into, you know, towards Israel, and you see these round balls that are kind of sitting there. And, you know, I've always looked at them and go, those are really strange looking, but nobody ever mentions them. And as I was just wondering...
Are these balls, you're saying, just how big are they? A few feet across? Are they?
No, they're maybe a... It's hard to say when you're driving past it. I've never had a chance to stop, but they're, you know, maybe at the most, maybe a foot across at the very most.
Okay. And these are in Jordan as you're traveling from Jordan.
Yes.
Over
I was just curious as to whether some of these, you know, these sulfur balls that fell out of the sky, did some of them actually fall on the other side of the Dead Sea?
Oh, yes, quite possibly.
Okay, Barbara, anything else you wanted to ask?
No, thank you very much. I tried to go down one time, going from Masada, snuck away from the group and tried to walk down and see what I could find, but I wasn't successful, and I didn't have enough information actually at the time. I wish I'd had a chance to hear your information before that. It would have been very helpful.
Anyway, thanks so much for calling,
thank
Barbara.
You.
And let's, of course,
thank you, Barbara.
Barbara, and we've got Ruby calling from Santa Cruz. But before we get to Ruby, Jonathan, I want you to get out your website, tell people how to get in touch with your ministry.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. My website is www.beforeus.com. BEFOREUS.
BeforeUs.com, and I will tell you, fascinating material there, and certainly Jonathan has. You've got these sets of videos, DVDs. How many do you have in a set? Can you get them individually, or do you have to get them all together?
They can be purchased individually, but we do have sets as well. I have a set on the discoveries, a set of eight, have two other sets of 14.
Two other sets of 14 and one set of 8, so that's an awful lot of DVDs. But anyway, they really are fascinating, and you'll never look at the world quite through the same eyes after you've seen these DVDs. Anyway, let's go to Ruby, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Hi, Ruby. How are you doing?
I'm fine, Dr. Stan. Thank you for taking my call. I'm really fascinated by this program.
Well, I'm glad you are. This is why we had Jonathan on, because he's really one of the most fascinating people I've encountered in a long time, who has a grasp of what we keep talking about. Go ahead.
Oh, well, it's just, I mean, you hear all these other weird things about UFOs and aliens and all that stuff, but to hear a biblical perspective on it is just great. I wanted to ask a question, and it's a little bit, maybe it's a little bit off the wall. I have heard that the Sphinx is dated to be much older than the other pyramids, and that it also shows extensive water damage. Could it have been built before all of the others and been damaged by the flood?
That's a very good question, and it would take me about 20 minutes probably to answer it satisfactorily for you. But there's evidence that it was built about the same time as the pyramids, and that it is post-flood, but to prove that would require more than just a very short answer. However, if you wanted to email me, go to my website, get hold of my email address and email me. I'll be happy to send you a written reply.
And the thing is that certainly the destruction of the face of the Sphinx, we've been told this was because they were using it for artillery practice when Napoleon was there. Is that true, do you think, or is that simply an old wives' tale?
Oh, I believe there could be some truth in that, yes.
Hmm.
Anything else, Ruby?
No, that was just kind of a question in my head. I'm just going to continue to listen to the rest of the show. It's just really intriguing.
All right, fine. Thank you. Well, bye. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 if you have a question for Jonathan. But, of course, we're talking about the ancient construction that really was done, and of course one of the things we've talked about, but I think it is worthwhile mentioning, is how were they actually able to accomplish what they did. And of course I think it's so vitally important that when we think about moving these massive stones, how they were able to boost them into the air and put them out in this beautiful symmetry. I mean, certainly without all the modern the methods of that we have today, or maybe they even had better methods of symmetry, of engineering, and even of lifting these stones and of crafting the stones. So would you like to talk a little bit about what we know about the ancient building techniques, now that perhaps many of these things have been forgotten?
Yes. We have, for example, in Baalbek's a very good example, because it's easily accessible. In Baalbek we have the remains of an ancient platform. And on this ancient platform, were built two of the largest Roman temples ever. And yet these are dwarfed by the platform itself. Now, the platform is made up of huge stone, dressed stone. These stones are as big as a bus. The stones are estimated to weigh anything up to 2,000 tons, or even more. These are put into place not just on the ground level, but two stories above ground. About 20 feet above the ground, these stones were put into place, each stone weighing 2,000 tons. Now, we do not have any cranes that can lift such stones today, nor any a combination of cranes that could lift them into position, let alone transport them. Such weight on a train, on a transport train, would absolutely crush the wheels. We don't have any technology that can duplicate what these people did. However, we do have questions which we can find answers for. You ask the ancient Egyptians how they listed some of their big stones. You ask the ancient Bolivians in the area of Tiwanaku in Bolivia near Lake Titicaca, how were the great stones listed into place there? You go into the Caroline Islands in the Western Pacific where Nan Madol is found, great stones lifted into place, and you go to India and other places, and an interesting parallel is found. Each one of these people, the descendants of those who used to do the work, tell us that sound waves were used to lift these great stones. Now, the Bolivians in South America don't know about the Egyptians, and vice versa, and neither do those in the little islands of the Pacific. These people have independently recorded and preserved a legend of how the stones were lifted by sound waves. So I guess we can presume there's some truth in a universal knowledge of the use of sound waves to lift heavy weights in the past.
But we have no idea how really it's done or how they were able to create the sound, and it would have to be a specific frequency of some sort. What are your thoughts?
Yes, it would have to be a specific frequency. One of the legends was that it was done with hammer blows. In other words, the sound of hammer blows. Of course, that could be like pistons going up and down. It could be anything. The sound of a hammer simply creates a frequency, and it would have to be done at a certain pitch for sure.
Well, this, Sydney, is fascinating, but there is knowledge out there, the secret knowledge that is not available today. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could lift these phenomenal stones, you know, great distances? Of course, we saw that at Stonehenge. How did they ever lift the stones there? How did they get them there? How did they lift the stones? I don't think that they were quite that heavy, but this was still an amazing accomplishment for the ancient Druids.
Certainly was. And today, if we could replicate the secret of what these people did, it would revolutionize our bridge building and a lot of things that we do today.
And I think it's so vitally important that people understand Jonathan's message. There was a golden age before the Great Flood, and there was a golden age after the Great Flood, and then there was a progressive loss of that knowledge to bring us to where we were, say, in the, you know, when America was founded, and then to the end of the beginning of the 20th century when we began to accumulate probably knowledge that had existed many thousands of years before. Would that be a fair statement?
It would be, yes. We're not the first by any means. We have ancestors who were brilliant.
Well, I just want to say that one of our listeners had actually told me about you. I certainly had never even heard of you until perhaps 6 months or so ago when we saw some of the videos that you'd done. They sent me the videos, and I didn't even know you were still living. You had an address here in America and didn't answer anymore, so I figured that probably you'd passed on until, of course, we heard you on the George Norrie program, and we're so pleased to know that you were still alive and well and still doing your research and writing and bringing this knowledge to people here in the United States and I'm sure throughout the world, this entirely different perspective than certainly most people would have today. And yet, of course, it deals with the fact that there is this spiritual dimension to everything. What sort of response do you get when you talk to people about this, you know, who are not Christians?
Well, generally, non-Christians are quite open to archaeological physical discoveries, and I find that archaeology is a wonderful entree to discuss, as a springboard to discuss the truth of biblical history for a start. But usually, people are interested in ancient technology, what our ancestors accomplished, the secrets of the lost races. And there are people out there who might be New Ages or something else who are interested in subjects like Noah's Ark and what happens to it. And a lot of them do believe such things, but they don't understand how real they are. Archaeology, I find, is a wonderful entrance to bringing people to the truth.
Well, let's just quickly, we're drawing to a close, but let's quickly touch on Noah's Ark. Because, of course, they say, well, if you could ever find Noah's Ark, you would validate the story of the of the Bible. But in your estimation, they have found Noah's Ark, haven't they?
Yes. I have no doubt about that whatsoever.
Because doesn't basically what they find actually correspond to the measurements that are in the Bible?
Yes, it does. Now, of course, I should preface this with a statement about Big Mount Ararat, where a lot of reports have come out. Not one of these reports has any evidence, and in many cases what was thought to be the ark turned out to be a split rock or something other than what the ark would be. And once again, the big mountain was a post-flood mountain. Turkish geologists will tell you that for sure, that Mount Ararat came up after the flood as a volcanic mountain. So if the ark did land there, it was lower down, and if it was if it came up as a volcano, it would have been destroyed by now. Now, the Bible doesn't say Mount Ararat. It simply says the mountains of Ararat, which Ararat was an area. It was an area with the name Urartu. We get the English word Ararat from it. It was a kingdom area in the east part of Turkey. That's what the Bible is saying, that it landed in the mountains of that region. Now, to the south of Mount Ararat, there are mountains, and about 12 miles across the valley to the south, there is the remains of this great ship-like structure, which has since been proven to be man-made. It's not a natural feature. It's the precise length of Noah's Ark given in Genesis. It's the precise average beam width of the Ark as given in Genesis. It's on the mountains of Ararat, exactly where Genesis puts it. It contains petrified deck timber, laminated deck timber, three-plied deck timber. It contains metal rivets. I estimate something like 4,300 metal rivets are holding it together. But it is in bad shape. It came down from an area higher up the mountain and impaled itself against a huge rock which is piercing it in the side. But there's no doubt it's a boat, and in my mind, what else can it be?
And
thousands of feet up at Noah's Ark.
And I think the thing is that the Turkish government has a visitor center. The Turkish government has said, this is Noah's Ark. The amazing thing is, every effort has been made to discourage it, accepting it. One of the most amazing things is the anchor stones. Would you like to describe those? And they're not too far away from Noah's Ark, are they?
That's true. The anchor stones was one of the things that got me thinking when I was skeptical about it. When I saw these anchor stones, that took away the doubt. These are huge, and they have the same pattern as ship's anchors that were used in ancient times. We've found a few of them. Other people have found a few ship's anchors on the seabeds, near the shipwrecks, elsewhere, and these have the same pattern. They're made the same way, except that they're larger, which would, of course, be correct because you'd need larger anchors for such a ship as the size of Noah's Ark. But the interesting thing is that these are on hilltops. All of these anchors that we find, and I think we've found about 13 of them so far, there could be another half dozen or more to find yet, but these are all on hilltops almost in a straight line. It's not quite straight, it's sort of bent on a curve, following the direction into the landing place of where the Ark is today.
And of course, there it is, the Turkey. But people are always coming up. In fact, there's been some new reports of another Noah's Ark. In fact, you just said something out about this, and that is totally a fraud, isn't it? Somebody had actually taken timbers up there to simulate the Noah's Ark?
Yes, a Frenchman by the name of Navarro was the first to take up timber, and the next year take up witnesses while he found the timber. And then he declared he'd found parts of Noah's Ark. Goodness me. But the Turkish government keeps close tabs on people like this, and they have records of these events.
And basically everything is done because, of course, if you can set up a straw man, then you can knock down the straw man. And then, of course, people say, oh, well, see, if we could just find Noah's Ark. Whereas, in fact, this has been found how long ago? How long ago did Ron White find this?
First found in 1978.
Now, was Ron one of the first people to find it, or did somebody find it before he did?
It was found before him by a group of archaeologists who went from America and who blasted a hole in the side because it's covered in mud. To see what came out, and out came shaped pieces of timber, but they were stone. And because they were stone, they said, well, timber can't petrify so fast, so this must be a natural formation. But Ron White was the first to identify it for what it is and to prove that petrified wood can take place in less than 100 years.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program. Our guest, Jonathan Gray, hope you've enjoyed the program. Well, Jonathan, we've got three more minutes, and then I'm going to let you go. But I really have been a fascinating program, and as always. But basically, what we've got three.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. And I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-dry guy, the best you can buy.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.com. 1-800-SPECIAL.
But right now, of course, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you're ever in a position to help us, we'd love to hear from you. Our telephone number is 1-888-1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. I want to mention we are, of course, going to be having our all-day conference. It's at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course here in the beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, the North Shore of Monterey Bay. And so if you're going to be coming, you'll need reservations. It's all-day session. We're bringing in David Aob, who's talked in the past about vaccines. He has some new information that you'll find even much more interesting. And then, of course, we have the we're going to have Sidney Paul Williams, who's a leading expert on the terrorist training camps operated here in the United States, with a full knowledge and, even the support of people within the government. Why would we be having terrorist training camps here in the United States being helped and permitted and many times being financed by our own government? Why, ladies and gentlemen? Because we have an invisible government, because we're moving into a period of chaos and crisis, and these people, of course, will be utilized as cannon fodder when the word is given. You'll want to hear Paul Williams and certainly Sheriff Mack will be here. We're going to have a great time. If you're interested in coming, our telephone number 1-800-544-8927. We're serving lunch, so you'll have to have reservations. And then, of course, we want to suggest if you have not read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or seen the DVD, you'll want to get that. And we'll begin to give you some idea about the true nature of the spiritual battle we're engaged in. If you'd like to know about the terrorist training camps in America, we have a video that was made in 1994 that showed the terrorist training camps, and the information was actively suppressed by the government until after the September 11th terrorist attack in 2001. This video was not allowed to be shown in the United States. We had a terrible time getting copies of this. We have it available. It's called Jihad in America. You will hear, of course, the head of Al-Qaeda talking in Oklahoma in the year 1988, talking about how they were going to have to cut off hands and feet. So that Allah would have feet to stand on. And he was talking about chopping off hands and feet here in the United States. This was